the more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying her habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
Welcome to Voices for the Animals on KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Noah Bristol. Along with Julianne Schwartz and Michelle Coppola, I bring you the show on the fourth Friday of every month at 10 a.m., or you can listen online anytime at kboo.fm/voices for the animals. We're on the air to give voice to the urgent animal welfare and rights issues happening locally, regionally, and worldwide. So whether you're an animal rights activist, a keyboard warrior, a vegan cupcake aficionado, an animal lover, a volunteer, or just tuning in today completely by accident and know nothing about animal rights, you're in the right place. Today we have an inspiring tale to share with you as I speak with Renee King-Sonnen. Renee and her husband Tommy are former beef cattle ranchers who underwent a moral awakening as first Renee and then her husband began to realize that they could not continue to be a part of a business whose success depends on the slaughter of animals that they loved, creatures who just wanted to be with their families and live out their lives in peace. At first, Renee's stubborn campaign against their family business seemed to threaten the integrity of their marriage and their future together, but eventually she convinced her husband to sell her the whole herd. With the help of supporters around the world, she raised the funds to buy that herd and in 2015 started Rowdy Girl Sanctuary, the very first beef cattle ranch to convert to an animal sanctuary in Texas, in the United States, and very possibly in the whole world. Welcome to the show, Renee.
Oh, hi. So glad to be here, Noah. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for calling in. It's lovely to be able to speak with you today. And I know I just spilled some spoilers to your personal story, but I'm excited to hear it in your own words. So can you tell me what's the first time that you started considering that you shouldn't be participating in animal agriculture?
Well, the very first time that I had an inkling that I shouldn't be selling animals was when I began to wake up as a result of feeding a calf, bottle feeding a calf named Rowdy Girl.
Oh.
And that really began to make me start having lots of questions. It took me 4 years to finally make decisions to where I could actually go from being a part of the problem to a part of the solution. But Rowdy Girl herself is what opened my eyes.
Rowdy Girl was a calf in need who required you to bottle feed her. Is that right?
Yeah, Rowdy Girl was a little baby. My husband was trying to figure out a way to get me more involved in the ranching business. We had been divorced and remarried. And so when we remarried, I moved from Pearland to the farm. And Pearland, you know, was kind of like considered the outskirts of Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I always was a city girl. And when I moved to the ranch, I really didn't pay attention to any of the cows or the, you know, chickens. I didn't notice them from a heart space at all until I started feeding Rowdy Girl, the calf that Tommy wanted me to buy. He wanted me to buy her and another little calf that I named Bobo because they didn't have moms. And he thought by doing that, I would get more involved in helping him run the farm because I really wasn't that interested.
It didn't turn out quite the way he expected, did it?
No, it backfired on him. So it was about 4.5 years whenever I started to finally wake up. And, you know, when I did have my final awakening, it was, you know, as they say in Texas, it was Katie bar the door because I was not going to close my eyes again once they were wide open. And, you know, and my husband had just retired from Dow Chemical. He had been there, you know, you know, for a total of 40 years, and he was retired. He had just retired, and you know, had a lot of plans for his life, and rightly so. I mean, you know, he had worked all his life and slaved the Dow, and then you know, a couple of months later, his wife goes vegan. I mean, you know, just totally shot everything to hell for him.
Well, a mind once expanded by a new idea can never return to its original dimensions. So how long did it take to expand Tommy's mind in the same way? Was he a bit more resistant?
Oh, yeah, he was a lot more resistant, but he was willing. Mm-hmm. Resistant, yes, but willing. He remained willing all the way to the point of his wake-up. He had that on May 2nd of 2015. And just like I remember the date, I can probably tell you just about the hour that I actually crossed over and went vegan. It was October 31st, 2014. For my husband, it was just a few months later, November, December, January, February, March, April, May. 7 months later, my husband was vegan. So, and it was a result of a lot of things that transpired between October and our first vegan awareness festival and fundraiser on May 2nd. That's where So Delicious and Follow Your Heart just won over my husband's heart. He was like, you know,
if, and his stomach.
Know, I can eat ice cream, I can eat cheese, and so, you know, why not? He had already been pretty much a vegetarian at that point, and then when he, you know, I never forget seeing him on that Kawasaki mule going through the pasture, and he held up his hand with a big old So Delicious ice cream on it. And I was like, oh, yeah, he had a big old smile on his face and he had thumbs up, you know.
That's so a beautiful image.
Yeah, it really was a beautiful image. I wish I'd had a picture of it.
And now it sounds like he's fully invested in your work together and you are fighting together for animal rights and protecting animals. Is that right?
Yeah, we are. We do work together. He's, you know, he's the foundation, boots on the ground, you know, the guy out in the rain, the sleet, snow, whatever it is. He's the one out there, you know, protecting the cows, making sure they have what they need. We do the best we can to, you know, to take care of everyone around here. And, you know, that's his real strength.
So 4 years later, what is the mission of Rowdy Girl Sanctuary?
Well, our real mission has from the very beginning what's happened as a result of our particular story going viral is ranchers and their families reach out to us. And our program, the Rancher Advocacy Program, you know, was born out of a natural outpouring of, you know, typical everyday American farmers and their families reaching out to me, because when our story landed in the laps of everyday common people that just were doing the next right thing that they thought they were supposed to do every day to feed America, you know, when that started happening to them, they reached out to us because, you know, it's hard to talk about those feelings that are long suppressed. Oppression is present, you know. And I always liken it to somebody in recovery, you know, can best talk to another person in recovery because they've been there, done that. And it's the same thing with ranchers and their families that are wanting to even consider the taboo subject of talking about how they feel about their animals that they kill. Yeah, it's a taboo subject, for real.
Yeah, that's fascinating to me that your personal story went viral, and then you started seeing other families, much like yourselves, who are invested in the business of animal agriculture but having doubts, start to reach out to you. And is that why you decided to start the Rancher Advocacy Program?
Yeah, that was how the Rancher Advocacy Program was founded. I mean, it was a natural evolution of our work. When one of our strategic advisors was meeting with me one day about, you know, next steps for Rowdy Girl, this was several years ago, she said, you know, you need to really start thinking about your programs, what's going to set you apart from other organizations, you know, what is it that really resonates with you as a program? And I was like, you know, I mean, I'd never been asked that question. I wasn't thinking about that.
Yeah.
But she, her name is Nikki. She's the one that gave me permission to think like that. And I was like, well, I mean, I guess if I mean, I was very naive. Okay. I said, well, I guess if I had to have a program, it would be to advocate for ranchers. You know, I'm a rancher's advocate, just like I'm an animal advocate. And she went, there's your program. And I was like, really?
Simple as that.
That's literally how it was conceived.
Wow. And I imagine there is such a need for that in this country and around the world. Have you, what experiences have you had in that rancher advocacy program? Is there any inspiring stories you can share with me?
Oh, there's a few. There's one in particular that is inspiring the world right now. I really do believe that as a result of the Barrett Family Farms video we just put out last night, it's on our YouTube. It's the Barrett, you know, origin story, if you will. And they live in Wicks, Arkansas. They had a chicken farm and a cattle ranch. They process 100,000 chickens every 52 days in four different 20,000 square foot sheds. And they did this for 18 years. And the awakening that this family had, this typical American salt of the earth family had, I mean, I can hardly talk about it without just crying because I mean, I'm so grateful to be working with them. But I didn't know that it was going to go this far when I first, you know, dropped everything I was doing to go with this family because they were about to lose the farm, literally. They were about to lose the 200 plus cows that depended on them because they didn't have any food, no hay.
Mm-hmm.
They were about to have their lights turned off. They were about to lose everything. And
because they had made the choice no longer to farm chickens and send them to slaughter, is that right?
Yeah, they had quit farming chickens. They'd sent their final batch. I can't remember exactly the month and the year. I mean, it was like not too long ago. So I don't want to like botch up the exact date, but it wasn't too long ago. I think it was like, I don't know, maybe 9 or 10 months ago. And or maybe a little bit, maybe it was a year ago. But the thing is, once they did that, they were supposed to be getting guidance and direction from another organization. And they, the other organization just did not come through for them. And that's why the business of transitioning farms and ranches is so necessary and important. I mean, it can't just be people that want to do this because, you know, they want to do it and they're, you know, they you got to take care of them from the bottom up, not the top down.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, because they believed in some folks, they literally were at the point of completely losing everything. Because promises were made and were broken for this family. And so they were pretty much at the bottom of their options. They didn't know where to turn, what to do. And I got this letter from Jennifer. We were traveling as a result of, I think we had just taken Honey and Ginger, two cows, from the Trailers, which is another family in our rancher advocacy program. We had just helped them transport those cows to Starlove, which is another family in our rancher advocacy program, both in Texas. And so we were in the middle of doing all this traveling. We were tired. We were exhausted. And then I get this letter, and Jennifer's pouring her heart out. I don't know what to do. I was like, oh, my God, I got to help. I got to do something. So literally within the next 12 hours, I was driving to Arkansas with Ryuji. We had no idea what we were getting into, except I knew I had to do a fundraiser to help her get hay for the cows. That was the number one thing I had to do.
Wow.
I just had to help them get hay because they didn't have any more hay. They had like 2 or 3 bales left for their 200 cows. And so we raised $25,000 or so in 48 hours and got them some hay.
Incredible how much one letter can change your life.
Yeah. And from there, we just started having real conversations and they were, you know, very, very scared and leery at first, but I basically went in their home, took over to get the money. I mean, I really had to take over their home. I said, look, if you want me to raise this money, you're going to have to just hang with me. Mm-hmm. We got to get this done. I mean, I'm fixing to amp up the momentum to get your cows the food they need, but we gotta do this. And so Ryuji and I went to work, you know, getting video footage, you know, making, you know, the right video content so that we could do the a fundraiser to feed them cows. And from there, I accelerated it all up to the folks that work with us. We have an incredible team in our rancher advisory committee, our coalition, and some of our funding sources. And we began to take the next step to convert what was once a chicken farm to a mushroom farm. And that's what we're doing.
A mushroom farm. Beautiful. Yeah, these people who are engaged in animal agriculture, they're just people, just good people who think that they're engaged in an honorable profession. And once they realize that it's probably not the healthiest for them, for the animals, or for the people that they are feeding, they need another option. And it's beautiful that you are out there helping to guide and give them advice on what other options exist that allow them to continue to farm, continue to feed themselves, to provide for their families, but also feed the world in a much more sustainable and kind way. Now, I just watched this 10-minute documentary last night and brought a tear to my eye. So how can people who are listening now see this documentary?
Absolutely. They can go to my YouTube channel. It's Rowdy Girl Sanctuary. And it's right there. And it's also, if you go on our Instagram, Rowdy Girl Sanctuary, I think it's the very first post right now. You click there, you can, it's on our bio on Instagram, and it's on our Facebook. So it's, we launched it last night about 7 p.m. We've been working on it for weeks. Finally got it all finished. And it's, last time I looked at it, it had right at 700 views, and we just put it up at 7 o'clock last night. We're excited.
Beautiful. And if you're just tuning in, this is Noah Bristol with Voices for the Animals, and you're hearing my interview with Renee Kingsonen, who is the founder of Rowdy Girl Sanctuary, a converted beef cattle ranch into an animal sanctuary in Texas. And she's been telling me about her rancher advocacy program, whose purpose and mission, correct me if I'm wrong, is to help other farmers who are in animal agriculture transition to a plant-based mode of farming and provide sanctuary rather than a slaughterhouse to the animals currently in their care. What's going to happen to those 200 cattle?
Well, right now, those 240 head of cattle are being taken care of through the funding sources that we've provided, you know, for them so far. So, you know, the problem we have in our world right now in the world of animal sanctuaries, especially for large, you know, animals like bovine, horses, pigs, is that there's not enough land mass anymore to properly care for. I mean, these animals don't need humans to feed them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need humans to give them shots and all that. They just need to be on open ranges and doing what they do, and that's eat grass and know what to eat to help with all the other viruses and stuff they might get. I mean, animals, just like humans, you know, they're very, very smart. They know what they need for their bodies. Problem is, humanity has gone, you know, to the extreme in animal agriculture, and they've literally raped the planet of resources. They're raping the animals to breed them. You know, and quite frankly, they're raping, you know, the media and politics too, in my opinion. I mean, I say that very bluntly because I believe that it's just totally a takeover. And animal agriculture, whoever is at the bottom of it or the top of it, they're really taking over the consciousness of humanity to believe that it's right. It's normalized violence, and it absolutely has to be talked out, just like I'm doing, for people to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are we going to do with them cows? Well, let me ask you, Noah, what would you do with them?
Well, if they were in my care, I would do my darndest to make sure that they lived long, healthy, happy lives. And I hope...
But how would you do that? How would you do... I mean, I'm going to turn this around because, see, this is when people ask me this question, and I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Because what do you do? What do you do when you have a mass exodus of 5,000 cows? You know, what if you have right now? What if you have five farmers today come to our program and say, "I'm ready to get out. I don't have any more money. I'm going bankrupt. I've got, you know, 2,000 dairy cows. I've got a herd of, you know, 10,000 beef cows over here. You know, I got 100,000 chickens and another poultry shed. You know, I mean, what do you do when you start having these mass exoduses, which is going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
There's going to come a time when this is going to happen. I mean, because the handwriting's already on the wall with, you know, suicides by dairy farmers and other farmers, dairy farmers going out of business. You know, Dean's just, you know, announced, you know, they're going out of business, a big dairy farm. And so what you do with all these animals is such a hard question. And one I'm really, really doing everything I can to answer, because we have turned our land mass into a mess, but into a confinement, a prison for these animals. So there's no room for them.
It's a very important question, and I wish I had the answers for you, and I don't blame you for not having all the answers. But I can ask you this. How can people who are listening now help with your mission or with the Barrett Farm? Is there any way that they can support you?
Yes. People that want to help and want to support this can contact me at Renee, R-E-N-E-E, at rowdygirlsanctuary.org.
Renee, R-E-N-E-E, at rowdygirlsanctuary.org. I hope you get lots of emails.
That's the best way to reach out to me. You can private message me on my Facebook, on my Instagram. I'm very accessible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always respond to people reaching out to me, because I can't do this by myself. And, you know, we're looking into land grants. You know, how can we get land grants? You know, one of our farmers is really into the whole, you know, holistic land management. And, you know, it's a vegan family.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we can, you know, get the land back and we can restore the land, you know, and we could then have a place where we could put these animals when there is these mass exoduses from farmers and ranchers. And it would land that would be ready for animals depending on geographically, you know, where they're located. You know, we'd have to create, you know, protocols for all the different geography of the world. As far as the land management goes and how to restore the land. But then you could put animals back to the land. But the thing is, you would have to create a whole new sanctuary model, and that model would include wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
And so wildlife would go back. There would be natural predation. And, you know, there would be some sort of high-level management, if you will, but not land management like it is today in today's world, because land management today is stuck, okay? Because it's not really land management for the animals. It's land management so the animal ag can grow more animals to feed the world, so to speak, right? It's just a vicious cycle.
Yeah, I often hear that question of, well, what will happen to all the animals currently in animal agriculture if the whole world stops eating animals overnight? And of course, that question is unrealistic, but as this movement continues to gain momentum and more people realize that eating animals isn't to their own benefit or the world's benefit, we do see more and more large herds of animals in need of a home, in need of sanctuary, when they're no longer a part of that system. And that's a very important question. So if you have ideas, if you have answers for Renee, you can contact her, renee@rowdygirlsanctuary.org.
Thank you. Absolutely, please. We are exploring those options right now. Critical.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to sidestep a little bit here. And I've only visited Texas a couple of times myself, but I know that Texans have a strong cultural identity, and it seems to me that a significant part of that identity is tied to animal agriculture, ranching, rodeo, cooking and eating animals. Do you think that's accurate, and does it make it more difficult to spread a vegan and an animal rights message in Texas than perhaps in other parts of the country?
Well, you know, your description is accurate. I mean, Texas is a large piece of land on the planet. There's 248,000 farms and ranches in this state alone. You know, 98% of them are family-owned,
mm-hmm.
Compared to factory farms, okay?
Yeah.
And Texas does have a real culture for rodeos, cattle ranches, you know, it's just barbecue, cook-offs, you know, all that. It's all bigger and better and fully, Texans are fully engaged in that lifestyle. I used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I was always at the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. I've been on trail rides, had a collection of leather boots. I participated in barbecue, chili cook-offs. I used to have a school where I taught stage and vocal performance years ago, and my students opened up in the Houston Astrodome, you know, during the rodeo. So that's part of the culture of Texas. That is who we are. But Texans, by and large, are not cruel people. It's just our culture. I mean, if you go back to the old days, you know, when, you know, they used to drive cattle through San Antonio, you know, I mean, this is how Texas was defined.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that it has to always be that way. You know, my husband's family his multi-generational background, you know, comes from the late 1800s when his great-grandpa, you know, came through from San Antonio to Houston with a herd of animals, cows, that he claimed as his own on the wild range, you know, branded them S-O-N. And they had a slaughterhouse in Houston, one in Alvin. So that's part of our culture, part of our heritage, yes. But it's not who we are. It's our heritage. It's tradition.
Mm.
What I believe Texas is capable of is hearing the truth. I believe Texans are capable, if once they see and once they know, of changing. And when you can change Texas, when you can start getting more and more farms in Texas, in the South, period, to go vegan, to change, the world's watching. You know, one after the other. It's kind of like, you know, the emperor, you know, wore new clothes, or what is that, when the emperor went through his kingdom and he was naked or didn't have any pants on or something?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody said anything until one person said something. Mm-hmm. Hey, dude, you know, you ain't got no pants on. What are you doing walking around like that? Well, that's what's happening now. I mean, you know, Texans are starting to see that, hey, you mean we don't have to, you know, sell animals to still be Texans and own land? Oh, well, how else are we going to do it? Well, so the rancher advocacy program is helping those ranchers and those farmers, you know, understand what else they can do on the land that they dearly love, you know, with the animals that they love to be around, because that's one of the big paradoxes, you know, is that ranchers do love animals and kill them. And one of my biggest messages is helping them to see that, yes, they do love animals and kill them, but are they really loving animals if they're eating a chicken sandwich with a chicken down at their feet? Is that love? And so these are the kind of questions I ask ranchers and farmers. This is what woke me up.
Well, thank you for posing that question, Renee. We're running out of time now on our radio broadcast portion of this show. But I'm going to continue this conversation with Renee on the podcast version, which again you can find on kboo.fm/voicesfortheanimals. Before we go there, Renee, is there any last thing you'd like to share with our audience?
We're going to be having our RAP Summit September 18th through the 20th in Austin, Texas at the Westin. And we will have all our farmers there. We will have, you know, experts in the industry there. It's going to be an amazing opportunity to see what we're doing, to experience the shift that's happening right here in Texas.
Welcome, Renee. We're now on the internet. We can say anything we want.
We can say anything we want now.
Well, you've always inspired me, Renee. I first met you a couple years ago at the Animal Liberation Conference and heard you speak and heard you tell your story. Even got to be a part of your story. I think we play-acted it out and I played your husband. You remember that?
Oh, my God, that was you?
That was me.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You mean you were actually my husband in another life and I knew it?
That's right. I was Tommy. I got to come up with everything I thought Tommy might say, like, well, our families have been doing this for generations, and why are you trying to change everything right now? So we got to relive that experience together.
That was fun.
As far as animal rights activism, I've seen you at the Animal Liberation Conference the past 2 years. How involved are you in that? Are you traveling around the world? Are you giving speeches all the time? What does Renee's life look like?
Well, you know, I do travel. I probably could do a lot more traveling if I wanted to. But right now, I'm trying to get reacclimated to being at a new sanctuary, a new location in Texas. You know, Mm-hmm. Those of y'all that have followed us out there know that we've been flooded 3 times out of 4 years, 3 years out of four in Angleton. And I've had to evacuate, you know, all of our animals each time and then think about us.
Wow.
And so it's been a real difficult time of our lives to have had to go through all that. Mm. But we're still standing. We're not only are we still standing, it's made us so strong. But in the midst of all that, I have traveled. I have, you know, I do speak all over the country. I've been to other parts of the world now, like Canada. And I spoke, you know, at a UK conference via Skype. I've been to Costa Rica. I'm thinking about going to the Animal Liberation Conference in April in New York, which I've been invited to go to and speak. So that's on my forefront. But right now, it's just like we're getting stabilized in Welder.
How you can manage it all surpasses my mind. So congratulations on all you've been able to accomplish. Do you have enough help? Do you have a volunteer force at the sanctuary?
We do have volunteers, but more than that, we have, my husband. We have, you know, two incredible employees that take care of the animals full time. Mm-hmm. If I didn't have full-time help here, real people that get paid, there's no way you can rely on a volunteer force. Volunteers come and go.
So, yeah, of course.
I mean, we like our volunteers. We love volunteers, don't get me wrong, but you can't depend on volunteers when you really need them, you know? So we have two full-time animal caretakers. I have a full-time executive assistant that works with me. And then we just brought on Jerry Devereaux, who is our organizational developer, and her daughter just moved here.
Is it still mostly cattle at the Rowdy Girl Sanctuary, or is it a variety of other species?
We have a variety, but mostly it is the bovine species. We have 63. We recently rescued a surrendered Brahmin. His name is JD, and he's right now the love of my life. Oh. He's absolutely gorgeous and beautiful, and he came from a breeder, and, you know, I got to educate his family. They loved JD. They were afraid they were going to have to put him down because they couldn't find a suitable home for him. And if they didn't, they were going to euthanize him rather than let him end up in the wrong arms and being slaughtered. So he's here. We have, you know, a little over 40 chickens. I have a house turkey. Her name is Seeley. We have ducks. We have a couple of ducks. We have three great big hogs that are FFA surrenders. We have Ivy, our pot-bellied pig. He was also going to be euthanized, and that's why she's here. We have 5 goats. We have 1 sheep and 3 horses.
That's quite the collection of friends.
Yeah.
What kind of events do you put on? I've seen pictures of, you know, little festivals or parties that Rowdy Girl Sanctuary has put on. Is that a lot of fun?
Yeah, we do our best to have an event every month. Once a month, we just had our Welder welcome for the first time since we've been in Welder. My husband came here in May. I came here in September, and we had our first event in November. And so we had 59 people here. We tell our story. We, feed the animals. We have sing-alongs. We share food. People are always wanting to, you know, see what kind of fun stuff we have. You know, our rowdy swag, we have a lot of fun stuff. And we go out and see the cows. Like next month in December, we're going to have a holiday cookie, like a holiday cookie and recipe share.
Ooh.
So everybody's going to bring, you know, holiday cookies and recipes. And we're going to have a hayride and go see the cows and music, caroling and all that.
Yeah, for anyone listening who hasn't been to a sanctuary, there's probably one near you, and you should make time to go. It's very lovely to visit with animals who were probably bred for animal agricultural purposes, but have personalities and charisma all their own, and it's great to get to know them and befriend them. Right here in the Portland area, we have many, so if you're listening locally, then there's certainly opportunity for that. Do you have a sense, Renee, that similar farm transitions are happening throughout the rest of the world? I mean, for example, the other day I read an article about a cattle slaughterhouse in the Netherlands where 2,500 animals were killed and their bodies processed each week. And that facility is now transitioning into being a dedicated vegan meat factory, with all the same workers who were formerly slaughtering animals now producing cruelty-free meat alternatives. Did you hear about that one, or have you heard about others?
I did hear about that, and I think that is exactly the future of what we need to be doing. Mm-hmm. I told my team about a year ago, in fact, I think it might even be on my website, you know, that the whole clean meat, you know, movement that's coming down. I mean, think about these big farmers, you know, that have thousands of cattle and stuff, and they have all this land, and they have, you know, they need to make a lot of money to keep up their operation. The, you know, the way that things are going with the vegan meat, the clean meat, whatever it is, you know, I mean, I would never eat it, but it could be made for cat food, for, you know, whatever other animals have to have that kind of food, or quite frankly, for the people that may never go vegan, just so animals don't get killed.
Yeah, for those listening who don't know, clean meat refers to muscle tissue meat that is real meat. It is animal tissue, but it's grown in a laboratory setting rather than grown in a whole animal with a brain and a mind. And that is, as Renee says, something that is on the cutting edge of the food industry. And there are companies like Memphis Foods right now who are going along with any sort of animal product you can imagine without requiring raising and killing an actual animal.
Yep. And so, you know, the thing is, if we can start getting these, you know, real animal farmers that have, a lot of land, and if there could be a way to rescue those animals, though, instead of send them to slaughter, so that there could be a sanctuary for this herd of animals and a clean meat or vegan meat facility, that to me would just be beautiful. What a way to educate.
And hopefully it would be more profitable for those farmers, those family farmers, too, because as far as I know, the margins are razor thin in animal agriculture now. Is that right?
Oh, they are. And there's so many animal ag subsidies and bailouts that, you know, if you look at the real numbers and the real deal, it's ridiculous. There's no way that farmers can really, we can't keep doing this. I mean, our government is really part of the problem. You know, it's creating a real dependent nation. Our farmers are dependent on our government because, you know, when catastrophe strikes through floods or fires or whatever, and the animal ag families are incentivized to leave to perish in these climactic events, then what you've got is a very sick system where our government comes in and bails out the farmer, gives them more money to keep doing the same thing, and all these animals just can keep dying and keep perishing. It's pathetic.
Do you have a sense or facts about how much of our tax-funded food subsidies go towards animal agriculture versus plant-based agriculture?
It's so topsy-turvy. We have I'm on the board of an organization called the Agricultural Fairness Alliance, and the folks that really are the experts there on talking about animal ag subsidies are Connie Spence and Laura Reese. They're the co-founders of the Agriculture Fairness Alliance, and that I sit on the board of. And they have legislation right now. It's called the At-Risk Farmers Act. And it is a result of the studies that they did on our rancher advocacy program. And we did that in concert with them, and legislation was created and is now in Congress to actually help farmers, give farmers another option so that they don't have to depend on animal ag subsidies. They can, you know, get subsidies for plant-based, you know, to make plant-based changes on their farm. So I don't want to get into all the numbers because I'm liable to say something that could be wrong.
I know how you feel.
You know?
Yeah.
Connie and Laura, two of my very, very dear associates and partners, absolutely would be the ones to talk to.
How many organizations are you part of, Renee? How do you find time for all of it?
Well, I'll tell you my secret. I don't find time. It just, time exists. And I just, I go where I'm needed. I show up where I'm asked to show up. If for some reason, you know, I say no, but, you know, the Agricultural Fairness Alliance is real near and dear to my heart, because, you know, they're all about creating the legislation that we need to free animals, humans, and all from the oppression of animal ag.
Yeah, if there's anything I've learned over the last decade, it's that no one route to animal liberation or animal rights is going to succeed without many, many other different avenues toward this, including system-wide legislation, as well as, you know, on the ground changing hearts and minds and allowing people to transition out of animal agriculture. Now, speaking of organizations, go ahead.
Sometimes it seems daunting, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it seems like, you know, there's no way you can do anything to change the current system. And in many ways, I really don't think we can really do much to change the system. I think what we do is we keep doing what we can to create new systems so that the old systems just start to fall away. You know, if we can create new legislation, new ways of doing things, and then the old system, just kind of like a snake that sheds its skin, it just kind of leaves behind this old skin and is new. The same thing with like a butterfly, you know, coming out of a cocoon. You know, you just break out, and what was once a worm that ate everything in sight, you know, as Dr. Silas Rao always says, is now this beautiful butterfly that feeds on nectar. And I think humanity is at a place right now in our evolution of our consciousness as a whole. I think we're at a place where a lot of us are waking up, and we're no longer willing to dine on the flesh and the excretions of chopped up bodies on a plate or in a bowl. We're starting to realize that we need to see that for what it really is and start eating plants and elevate our consciousness instead.
Beautiful vision. I might use that little mini speech as the promo for this episode.
Thank you. Well, the RAP Summit, we got the RAP Summit coming up. Oh, be sure, and have you seen our rancheradvocacy.org website? It's a different website than the Rowdy Girl.
I have personally, but I'm sure many people listening have not. That's rancheradvocacy.org?
Mm-hmm. Rancheradvocacy.org. It's being updated a lot. You know, we've got a lot of really great, you know, sponsors, partners, and allies that are already signed on with us. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you know, I can go down the list. Esther the Wonder Pig, Veg Fund, Vegan Investors, Cowspiracy, Kip Anderson, Kathy Preston, Pollution TV. There's just a whole list. I know I'll leave somebody off if I'm not looking at the website. Vegan Outreach.
That's rancheradvocacy.org. And what's the website for Rowdy Girl Sanctuary?
Rowdygirlsanctuary.org.
Copy that. So what's the animal rights community like in Texas?
You know, we have a really strong animal rights community in Houston. Dallas is pretty strong. You know, Austin and San Antonio is more of a plant-based food culture environment, but we plan on, you know, doing everything we can to lift that vibration and to help Austin and San Antonio, you know, let them know that we're here. Rowdy Girl is not only here for them as a sanctuary, but we're also here for them, you know, if they want to get more involved in animal rights. Because of what we're doing with our rancher advocacy program, the RAP Summit, which is coming up, going to be right there in Austin. You know, a lot of activists are going to be coming from all over the world to this summit. And so it's really time for Austin and San Antonio and other, you know, communities around to know that it's time to step up and be activists. I mean, there's a lot of vegans, plant-based people in Texas. I mean, it's just staggering how many, how much is happening in that world of, you know, plant-based food options in Texas. It's just, I had a meeting in 4 minutes.
Okay. Well, it's been lovely talking with you, Renee. Thank you so much for being a guest here on Voices for the Animals. For anyone listening, you can tune in on the radio 90.7 here in Portland, Oregon, KBOO. The fourth Friday of every month at 10 a.m. or listen to us anytime on kboo.fm/voicesfortheanimals. Thank you, Renee.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much. Thank you, Noah.
Have a wonderful day.
Anyway, I just looked at the clock.
Bye now.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.